Chapter 14. Lunch with Bowden. Bowden Cable is the sort of honest and dependable operative that is the backbone of Spec-Ops. They never win commendations or medals, and the public has no knowledge of them at all. They are all worth 10 of people like me. Thursday next, a life in Spec-Ops. Bowden guided me to a transport cafe on the old Oxford Road. I thought it was an odd choice for lunch. The seats were hard orange plastic, and the yellowing formica-covered tabletops had started to lift at the edges. The windows were almost opaque with dirt, and the nylon net curtains hung heavily with deposits of grease. Several flypapers dangled from the ceiling, their potency long worn off, the flies stuck to them long since desiccated to dust. Somebody had made an effort to make the interior slightly more cheery by sticking up a few pictures hastily cut from old calendars. A signed photo of the 1978 England soccer team was hung above a fireplace that had been filled in, and then decorated with a vase full of plastic flowers. "Are you sure?" I asked, sitting gingerly at a table near the window.
"The food's good," responded Bowden, as though that was all that mattered.
A gum-chewing waitress came up to the table and put some bent cutlery in front of us. She was about 50 and was wearing a uniform that might have been her mother's.
"Hello, Mr. Cable,"
she said in a flat tone with only a sliver of interest in her voice.
"All well?"
"Very well, thank you. Lottie, I'd like you to meet my new partner, Thursday next." Lottie looked at me oddly.
"Any relation to Captain next?"
"He was my brother," I said loudly, as if wanting Lottie to know that I wasn't ashamed of the connection. "And he didn't do what they said he did." The waitress stared at me for a moment, as if wanting to say something but not daring.
"What will you lot have, then?"
she asked instead, with forced cheerfulness. She had lost someone in the charge. I could sense it.
"What's the special?" asked Bowden.
"Soupe d'auvergne au fromage," replied Lottie,
"followed by rojoy's romino."
"What's that?" I asked.
"It's braised pork with cumin, coriander and lemon," replied Bowden.
"Sounds great.
Two specials, please, and a carafe of mineral water."
She nodded, scribbled a note, and gave me a sad smile before departing. Bowden looked at me with interest. He would have guessed eventually that I was ex-military. I wore it badly.
"Crimea veteran, eh? Did you know Colonel Phelps was in town?"
"I bumped into him on the airship yesterday. He wanted me to go to one of his rallies."
"Will you?"
"You must be kidding. His idea of the perfect end to the Crimean conflict is for us to fight and fight until there is no one left alive, and the peninsulas are poisoned and mined land no good for anything. I'm hoping that the UN can bring both governments to their senses."
"I was called up in 78, said Bowden. "Even got past basic training. Fortunately, it was the same year the Tsar died and the Crown Prince took over. There were more pressing demands on the young Emperor's time, so the Russians withdrew. I was never needed."
"I was reading somewhere that since the war started, only 7 years of the 131 have actually been spent fighting."
"But when they do," added Bowden, "they certainly make up for it."
I looked at him. He had taken a sip of water after offering the carafe to me first. "Married? Kids?"
"No," replied Bowden. "I haven't really had time to find myself a wife, although I am not against the idea in principle. It's just that Spec-Ops is not really a great place for meeting people, and I'm not, I confess, a great socializer. I've been shortlisted for a post opening the equivalent of a Literatech office in Ohio. It seems to me the perfect opportunity to take a wife."
"The money's good over there, and the facilities are excellent. I'd consider it myself given the opportunity," I replied. I meant it, too.
"Would you? Would you really?"
asked Bowden, with a flush of excitement that was curiously at odds with his slightly cold demeanour.
"Sure, change of scenery," I stammered, wanting to change the subject in case Bowden got the wrong idea.
"Have you, been a literatech long?"
Bowden thought for a moment. 10 years. I came from Cambridge with a degree in 19th-century literature and joined the literatech straight away. Jim Cromarty looked after me from the moment I started.
He stared out of the window wistfully.
"Perhaps if I'd been there..."
"Then you'd both be dead. Anyone who shoots a man 6 times in the face doesn't go to Sunday school. He'd have killed you and not even thought about it. There's little to be gained in what-ifs. Believe me, I know. I lost 2 fellow officers to Hades. I've been over it all 100 times. Yet it would probably happen exactly the same way if I had another chance."
Lottie placed the soup in front of us with a basket of freshly baked bread.
"Enjoy," said Lottie. "It's on the house."
"But..." I began. Lottie silenced me.
"Save your breath," she said impassively. "After the charge, after the shit hit the fan, after the first wave of death, you went back to do what you could. You went back. I value that."
She turned and left. The soup was good. The Rojos Chomino even better.
"Victor told me you worked on Shakespeare up in London," said Bowden.
It was the most prestigious area in which to work in the literatech office. Lake poetry was a close second, and Restoration comedy after that. Even in the most egalitarian of offices, a pecking order always established itself. There was very little room for promotion in the London office, so after a couple of years I was given the Shakespeare work, I replied, tearing at a piece of bread. "We get a lot of trouble from Baconians in London."
Bowden looked up.
"How do you rate the Baconian theory?"
"Not much. Like many people, I'm pretty sure there is more to Shakespeare than just Shakespeare. But Sir Francis Bacon using a little-known actor as a front, I just don't buy it."
"He was a trained lawyer," asserted Bowden. "Many of the plays have legal parlance to them."
"It means nothing," I replied. "Green, Nash, and especially Ben Jonson use legal phraseology. None of them had legal training. And don't even get me started on the so-called codes."
"No need to worry about that," replied Bowden. "I don't. I'm no Baconian either. He didn't write them."
"And what would make you so sure?"
"If you read his De Augmentis Scientiarum, you'll find Bacon actually criticizing popular drama. Furthermore, when the troupe Shakespeare belonged to applied to the king to form a theatre, they were referred to the commissioner for suits. Guess who was on that panel and most vociferously opposed the application?"
"Francis Bacon?" I asked.
"Exactly. Whoever wrote the plays, it wasn't Bacon. I formulated a few theories of my own over the years. Have you ever heard of Edward de Vere, the 17th Earl of Oxford?"
"Vaguely."
"There is some proof that, unlike Bacon, he could actually write and write quite well."
"Hang on." Lottie had brought a phone to the table. It was for Bowden. He wiped his mouth with a napkin.
"Yes?"
He looked up at me.
"Yes, she is. We'll be right over. Thanks."
"Problems?"
"It's your aunt and uncle. I don't know how to say this, but they've been kidnapped."
There were several police and spec ops cars clustered around the entrance to my mother's house when we pulled up. A small crowd had assembled and was peering over the fence. The dodos had gathered on the other side and were staring back, wondering what the fuss was all about. I showed my badge to the officer on duty.
"Literatech," he said scornfully. "Can't let you in, ma'am. Police and spec ops 9 only."
"He's my uncle," I said angrily. And the officer reluctantly let me through. Swindon was the same as London. A literatech's badge held about as much authority as a bus pass.
I found my mother in the living room, surrounded by damp Kleenex. I sat beside her and asked her what had happened. She blew her nose noisily.
"I called them in for dinner at one. It was Snorkers, Mycroft's favourite. There was no answer, so I went down to his workshop. They were both gone, and the double doors wide open. Mycroft wouldn't have gone out without saying anything."
This was true. Mycroft never left the house unless it was absolutely necessary. Since Owens had been harangued, Polly did all his running around. "Anything stolen?" I asked a Speshops 9 operative, who stared at me coldly. He didn't relish being asked questions by a literatech. "Who knows?" he replied with little emotion. "I understand you'd been in his workshop recently."
"Yesterday evening."
"Then perhaps you can have a look around and tell us if there is anything missing." I was escorted to Mycroft's workshop. The rear doors had been forced, and I looked around carefully. The table where Mycroft had kept all his bookworms had been cleared. All I could see was the massive two-pronged power lead that would have slotted into the back of the prose portal. "There was something right here. Several goldfish bowls full up with small worms, and a large book, a bit like a medieval church Bible."
"Can you draw it?" asked a familiar voice.
I turned to see Jack Shit lurking in the shadows, smoking a small cigarette and overseeing a Goliath technician who was passing a humming sensor over the ground. "Well, well," I said, "if it isn't Jack Shit, what's Goliath's interest in my uncle?"
"Can you draw it?" he repeated.
I nodded, and one of the Goliath men gave me a pencil and paper. I sketched out what I had seen, the intricate combination of dials and knobs on the front of the book, and the heavy brass straps. Jack Shit took it from me and studied it with great interest, as another Goliath technician walked in from outside.
"Well?" asked Shit.
The agent saluted neatly and showed Shit a pair of large and slightly molten G-clamps.
"Professor Next had jury-rigged his own set of cables to the electrical substation just next door. I spoke to the electricity board. They said they had three unexplained power drains of about 1.8 megawatts each late last night."
Jack Shit turned to me.
"You better leave this to us, Next," he said.
"Kidnapping and theft are not part of the Literatech's responsibility."
"Who did this?" I demanded. But Shit didn't take crap from anyone, least of all me. He wagged a finger in my direction.
"This investigation has nothing to do with you. We'll keep you informed of any developments. Or not, as I see fit."
He turned and walked away. "It was Acheron, wasn't it?" I said, slowly and deliberately. Shit stopped in mid-stride and turned to face me.
"Acheron is dead, Next. Burned to a crisp at Junction 12. Don't spread your theories around town, girl. It might make you seem more unstable than you actually are."
He smiled, without the least vestige of kindness, and walked out of the workshop to his waiting car.